All right, welcome back. Second half hour of tonight's show. Frank and Hobbo in the studio alongside former Cavalier player, former Cavalier radio analyst, Terry Gates, a man who knows a lot about Virginia basketball, knows a lot about basketball, knows a lot about commercial lending. What else do you know about?
Maybe food.
I don't. You don't look like you know a lot about food. You know, you're too thin.
He knows a lot about craft beer.
Bourbon, but well, you know,
bourbon. Well, you're from Kentucky. Bourbon, I would expect that. Beer. You know, you probably know horses too. You're from Kentucky. You got to know about horses, right?
They'll break your heart, like other things in life.
Well, anyway, we're still. Dave Glenn will probably be calling in here momentarily. I think he's on the line right now, so I'll pause that question and we'll again talk about Dave Glenn, ACC Sports Journal. Frank, how long has he been doing this?
Well, he's now a contributor. He's now his radio show is his day thing. So he's still a contributor to the ACC Sports Journal, and you know what I've always liked about Dave Glenn is he asks hard questions of Mike Krzyzewski, and that always makes things fun.
You know what impresses me is he was there in the spring of 1953 when the conference was formed. Isn't that right, Dave?
Yeah. Hey, I feel old enough, guys. I feel old enough. Yeah. Don't put me that far back.
Well, I was almost there. See, that even predates me, which tells you it was a long time ago. All right, let's look at the ACC. We're maybe a third of the way through the regular season. How do you break it down? Obviously, Notre Dame off to a great start alongside Florida State and North Carolina. Where do you see things going?
Yeah, you know, guys, I think we have tiers already. And at the very top, we have six teams that unless something weird happens with a major injury or something extreme, teams like UVA and Louisville and UNC and Duke, and we can add Notre Dame and Florida State to that list. Those six are mostly where they want to be, even if they need to upgrade here or there. At the bottom tier, we knew Boston College and Georgia Tech were going to have uphill battles this year. And in between, you have another seven teams that think if things go well for them, you know, they can add to what might be challenging the all-time record for most NCAA bids from a single conference. So it's a great league. It's a deep league. And those six teams so far have kind of announced themselves as a cut above.
Dave, when you watch the teams play this year, have you been struck by typically the inability of some of the favorite teams to put people away? They seem to get them in a bind, and then they can't quite run away from them. Now, Carolina did run away from NC State the other day in what was sort of an embarrassing first half. But other than that, most of the games have been all the way down to the wire.
Yeah, it's been crazy, Frank, and I think it's an extreme version of something we've seen for a long time. In every sport, including college basketball, there's always a home court advantage. But some of what you're describing there is an extreme version this year of home court advantage where, for example, you know, Virginia Tech hosts Duke and beats the Blue Devils pretty solidly. But the same Virginia Tech team tries to go to NC State, which is really struggling this year, and the Wolfpack crushes the Hokies. And similarly, you know, the Wolfpack turns around after crushing the Hokies. They try to go on the road to lowly Boston College, and the Eagles beat the Wolfpack. And Syracuse lost at Boston College. And in the return match, BC got crushed at Syracuse already. So it's a familiar theme. It's just a very extreme version of home court advantage.
You know, a long time ago, we got Terry Gates sitting beside us here. His coach, Terry Holland, said eventually, this was back when the ACC was 16 games, not 18. He said eventually everybody's going to be 8-8. sometimes I think we're moving closer and closer to that because, you know, the teams at the bottom of the league now, you know, Virginia played Wake Forest last Sunday night. And I thought Wake Forest, you know, Wake Forest gave Virginia everything they wanted, and Wake Forest certainly can play pretty well at this stage. So the teams at the bottom are very competitive.
I'm with you, Hobbo. And Georgia Tech already beat North Carolina, and Boston College already sprung a couple of those upsets. And we all know that if this league really were to challenge that all-time record for most NCAA bids from a single conference, which is 11, you would actually need some real bottom feeders to go, you know, if not 0-18, you know, how about a 2-16 or whatever? we might not have anybody better than 14-4 at the top end, and we might not have anybody worse than 4-14 at the bottom end. And if it does work out that way, that trend toward 8-8 that you're talking about, there's no way this league, as much as I respect it and believe it's a great deep league, there's no way it's going to challenge that 11 bids record. It's probably going to be more in that 8 or 9, maybe 10 neighborhood. Because, yeah, if you can't beat up on the guys at the bottom, they're stealing too many wins for the league to get that many bids.
Yeah, just a quick follow-up. You know, Virginia this week plays Boston College up there and then Georgia Tech at home. Certainly two games that if Virginia is going to get where they want to go, they need to win those games. But not necessarily easy anymore. Boston College has beaten, I think, Syracuse, and I'm trying to think who else. They beat NC State, I think.
Yeah.
And Georgia Tech, as you said, has already beaten Carolina. They beat NC State on the road last night. So those teams that you looked at the beginning of the season and sort of chalked them up as W's, you can't necessarily assume anything.
No, you're right. And Josh Pastner's only year one at Georgia Tech, so we thought it would take longer. But he found a big guy in Ben Lammers. If you haven't seen him play, he's, you know, at an all-ACC caliber level the way he has started this season. And he found a young guard named Josh Okogie. And at Boston College, the names are, you know, Jerome Robinson and Kai Bowman. Those two guards have made the Eagles. They're still going to probably finish in the bottom tier, both of them, Georgia Tech and BC. But as you're saying, they're dangerous enough to beat you on a given night, especially when they're on their home court. And that makes everybody else's job a little bit trickier.
Dave, are you a little surprised, considering Syracuse is 11-7 overall, that they're 3-2 in the conference?
I'm surprised. To me, the two biggest disappointments so far are Syracuse and NC State. You know, some of the teams toward the bottom of the standings, we kind of knew they'd be there. Syracuse has a chance to compete, I think, for an NCAA tournament bid. Maybe they're going to be better at the end than they were at the beginning, which is, of course, what happened during their Final Four season a year ago. They do have a lot of new faces, freshmen and transfers, but that's an ugly record by Syracuse standards, and only in the last week or so have they started to improve that. And at NC State, I mean, they're just really – Wolfpack Nation is in an uproar because they're tied for dead last in the ACC standings, and they have an NBA lottery pick in Dennis Smith Jr., as their freshman point guard. So at least Syracuse has started to right the ship. Pitt and NC State and some others are trending toward the bottom in a way that pretty soon it's going to be too late for them to turn it around.
Yeah, NC State, I mean, you're down there, but that had to be an ugly loss at Carolina. The Wolfpack Nation couldn't have been too happy about that. But talk to me about Notre Dame at Florida State on Wednesday night. Big game in the league. Florida State is awfully tough at home.
Yeah, and they're incredibly deep, Paulo. I mean, they're playing defense the way Leonard Hamilton usually plays defense, but they're much more diverse and skilled offensively than they have been at times in the past. Dwayne Bacon is an all-ACC player for them on the perimeter, and then Jonathan Isaac is a double-double type point rebound guy in the freshman class for the Seminoles, and they're pushing the ball with Xavier Rattan-Mays as their point guard. They're taking better shots, smarter shots. They're a more efficient offensive team. And Notre Dame's going to be a great challenge because where the Irish, they don't have the depth for Mike Bray that FSU has. That starting lineup for Notre Dame where, you know, it's Vastoria as a senior guard on the outside and Bonzi Colson as a veteran presence on the inside. And Matt Farrell at point guard is one of the most improved players from last year in the ACC. That starting lineup is what has Notre Dame playing as well, if not better, than anybody else in the ACC right now. And it's going to probably be another one of those, as you were talking about, Frank, that comes down to the final minute or so.
Dave, and by the way, we are speaking with Dave Glenn of the Dave Glenn Show and the ACC Sports Journal. Dave, you know, as you've watched everything materialize here and develop, what are you hearing about Krzyzewski and his back, and how long will he be out? The other thought is, have you ever seen a player like as talented as Grayson Allen get caught up with all this tripping nonsense or lack of composure or anger management or whatever it is? I mean, just I was wondering about those two thoughts and the whole Duke situation.
Well, I think you're circling a story that I've never seen before in my 30 years covering this league. And it's not that every little piece of the story we haven't seen before. It's the combination. Hmm. I mean, Grayson Allen is going through off-the-court stuff, you know, where people are throwing profane chants at him at every road game. He's also on the court making a conversion to point guard midstream after being a wing player last year. And all summer long, we thought he'd be the number one option, and he was the ACC preseason player of the year. And now he's asked to be a pass-first penetrating point guard, which is that's a lot going on for a talented young player that sees himself as a first-round NBA choice someday. And then the Mike Krzyzewski factor, it is different than 1995. It was a more serious back surgery back then when he never returned to that team. And that's the most recent example of the Blue Devils missing the NCAA tournament because that season ended just as a train wreck. This time, he's actually still involved through Jeff Capel on a day-to-day basis in a way that he was not involved in 1995. They do expect him to be back after it was 4 weeks from the surgery last Friday. So he'll be back by, let's see, what would that be, early February, first half of February.
Okay.
And they're just more talented this time than they were back in 95, but there's a lot of moving parts.
Well, Jefferson, Emile Jefferson is still hurt. One of those stars recruits, the number one recruit, is his name Guy, maybe?
Harry Giles is not quite himself yet.
He looks lost on defense.
He's coming off of three major knee surgeries and looks totally lost, as you said, instead of being, you know, he might end up someday as the NBA lottery pick, but his learning curve is extreme here in his freshman year. Jason Tatum is another talented freshman. He's a little further along, a lot further along.
As far as I'm concerned, he looks like the real deal.
Yeah, he is. He is. And that's why it's so hard to project. If Mike Krzyzewski is back, and they expect he will be, and Jefferson returns, and they expect he will, and Tatum's a better version of himself a month from now, and Giles is a better version of himself, and Luke Kennard is playing like an ACC Player of the Year candidate, and Grayson Allen does his thing, assumedly without too many more distractions, you know, then you're talking about a title contender again. But I've never seen a potential champion team with so many moving parts in mid-January as what the Duke Blue Devils have right now.
Yeah, you're right. And interestingly, you look at the standings right now, they're 0-3 on the road, which is not what you usually see with Duke. Dave, I'm just kind of curious, down in North Carolina, what's the conversation, if any, about the University of North Carolina academic scandal?
The first reaction to most is that it's taken forever. They're just wondering when it gets across the finish line. And then, I guess the big talk most recently, I don't know to what degree you guys covered it, but the long story short is that the revised notice of allegations that came out not long ago is infinitely more threatening with the language that it uses compared to the previous notice of allegations that came up maybe 6 months ago.
Yes.
So for those who hate the Tar Heels, I guess that was good news. For those who follow the Tar Heels, it was alarming news. But basically, you know, the NCAA under the old letter could not have punished the Tar Heels severely under the language of the previous letter. Under the language of the one that's enforced now, most severe sanctions are still on the table as options, even if we're not sure what they're going to be down the road.
We actually did. We had professional sports attorney Vern Inge in studio, and we spent a good, healthy 20 minutes trying to break it all down and trying to understand it. And it seems to me that when Carolina lawyered up, they pressed the issue too far and they antagonized the NCAA. And if they sleeping dogs lie, they probably would have gotten off with moderate punishment. But they antagonized the folks at the NCAA and they changed everything, didn't they?
Well, yeah, I think you make a good point, but it's UNC's comeback to that would be the very first letter. Remember, we're on letter number 3, notice of allegation.
Yep.
The first one was very threatening, which is what caused the Tar Heels to have the lawyer up, draw the line in the sand. You're not going to, you know, we're not going to let you make UNC the academic poster child the way you tried to make Penn State, you know, the criminal justice poster child in the Jerry Sandusky story. So UNC did lawyer up, and for a while it looked like it was going to work out well for the Tar Heels, because, again, that second notice of allegation was far less threatening
yes.
with what the Tar Heels were accused of. Well, now it's come 180 degrees, and now they're kind of back to the origins of it.
I know this guy, it's only going to get more antagonistic.
And Carolina's lawyering up. They're preparing an appeal. They'll do the lawsuit thing if needed, the way Penn State did. Very successfully, by the way, the Nittany Lions went after the NCAA,
yeah.
as did the state of Pennsylvania. So a lot still to be seen how it plays out, but that is one of the more rare, unique cases in NCAA history, and it's getting angrier all the time.
Dave, we've got about 30 seconds. Just your comment about Clemson's national football championship.
Huge for the ACC. You know, we're all around long enough to remember when ACC football was described as Florida State and the eight dwarves.
Yep.
And it was not an inaccurate description. So now you have kind of co-super heavyweights in the Seminoles and the Tigers and some really good depth behind those two. So it's essential that this league upgraded itself in football. And with two national championships in the last 4 years, one for FSU, one for Clemson, they've accomplished that goal.
Well, listen, we always thank you. You're terrific, and we look forward to having you back as the season unfolds.
Always good to be with you guys. You know my number. I'm happy to answer.
All right, Dave Glenn of the Dave Glenn Show, ACC
terrific.
Sports Journal. We'll be back with a final segment. We got Terry Gates in studio. We'll get back to Virginia basketball and some other things. Stay tuned. You're listening to Who's Talking.